This is the Oanda podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights podcast, where each week we preview and review all the big business and market stories. And this week, we're joined by Ed Moyer from New York.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Craig Earlham is having a few days off. I'm not sure how he got that or why he deserves that, but it's just you and me today.
It's going to be a special podcast. I'm looking forward to it.
Less interruptions, at least. Let's start with the shares. And if you recall this time last week, Ed, we were reflecting on those huge falls, particularly on your side of the Atlantic, down 7%, I seem to remember, and 4% in our case over here in the UK. But shares have rebounded pretty strongly since those lows. And can you tell us why?
Well, I think there's several factors that are driving this move. Yes, the markets do want to go higher. It's very obvious when you look at the technicals, but we've seen a tremendous amount of inflows from retail traders, which has really surprised a lot of Wall Street. Hedge funds missed the majority of the latest part of the rebound, so they finally decided to succumb to this move, and now they're on board. You had V-shaped recovery momentum really gain. You had a lot better economic data from the U.S. Retail sales really surprising. Obviously, we remember that non-farm payroll report. That was a record recovery there. And then you have just the countless expectations of more stimulus here all over the world, and there was that idea that President Trump was floating again a $1 trillion infrastructure stimulus deal, which will have a bipartisan support. So whether or not it's done before the election, that's debatable, but it's pretty apparent that the U.S. economy will get another another trillion here, and probably like an extension of some of these benefits. So I think you're seeing just the stimulus continue to help propel these markets. And you know, at some point, the fundamentals will have to validate these asset prices. But right now, the momentum is just too strong, and that's why we've seen a strong recovery, which has recovered a lot of those declines from last week, specifically Thursday.
Yes, and you mentioned the central banks. You're talking in the trillions, and our bank, the Bank of England, pumped an extra $100 billion into the UK economy to help fight the downturn, and the bank's policymakers voting 8-1 to increase the size of its bond buying program. And the one dissenting voice was Mr. Andy Haldane, who of course is their chief economist. Was that significant, by the way?
I think it really kind of provided a little bit of a surprise here, because it cemented this upbeat, relatively upbeat interest rate decision that they just had. It seems that the BOE believes that the worst part of this economic downturn is behind them, and that Haldane is, you know, he wanted to keep the purchase program at the current pace. And I think that you're going to see that there was also hints that they're going to have a slower pace of purchases starting next week. So, you know, that's basically we're used to seeing 13.5 billion in pounds helping liquidity conditions, and that's going to be cut down to about 4.5 billion. So you're starting to see if central banks are starting to you know, reduce what they're pumping into the markets, they're very upbeat on the economy. So I think the near term outlook is definitely looking a lot better for the Bank of England. I think the one negative is they're still concerned about the labor market, and I think that's arguably going to be the case for much of the world. But you're starting to see that there is some positive momentum building in the UK economy, and I think there are expectations that more stimulus is going to come down the road. But right now it seems like the Bank of England is going to be able to stand pat. They don't have to make any decisions on negative interest rates. We don't know how the economic recovery, we don't know how the virus is going to unfold throughout the rest of the year. So it seems that they're just going to be sticking to their current positions right now, and I think if the rebound continues, you'll probably continue to see the Bank of England react in this way.
And there is definitely some optimism in the air as well. We've ended the week with the coronavirus alert level being downgraded from 4 to 3. Boy, did it take time. This has come from the chief medical officer, and that means that the virus is now considered to be, in inverted commas, in general circulation, and that could lead to further relaxation of restrictions. Of course, we had non-essential retail open on Monday, and that has produced mixed results. Not huge numbers of sales, but certainly people are returning to the high street. And we've still got a few weeks before, I think it's a couple of weeks before we have the all the pubs and the restaurants and the hospitality that is opening on a very important date for you guys, the 4th of July. And there's much talk about whether we're going to reduce the meter rule from 2 meters to one. And I can only imagine that must be very, very, very near to happening, because it's absolutely vital for UK PLC. So it is a much more optimistic air around. But as you said, we're never far away from a sudden crisis. Maybe there's going to be another wave in another country, and we've seen that in the United States. We've seen that in China. It seems to be on the downward trend in Europe at the moment, but we need it to stay that way.
Very much so, and I think though you painted a nice picture here, because whenever you, I mean, when we take a look at this virus across the world, right now we are seeing several surges all over the place. A lot in the U.S. We did have Beijing earlier in the week, but right now in the U.K., the virus is no longer spreading exponentially, and that is great news. And I think that when you combine it with some of the other news on the pharmaceutical side, you have GlaxoSmithKline. They have their COVID-19 vaccine partnership with Clover that's started testing on humans. So you're also seeing that with the big uncertainty for the future, the hopes are getting higher that we're going to see one. There's over 100 vaccines being tested. The UK's got a couple good ones right now that people are have a lot of high hopes on. That if some of these pan out, this is going to be kind of the saving grace for delivering the complete recovery of air travel, and all the social distancing will be able to ease if people do stick to using the vaccines and if they're efficient. But I think you're going to see that that's going to be the case. And you had some positive breakthroughs on treatments. So there's a lot of optimism that the uncertainty of the virus is persisting, and a second wave is very possible. The hope is that each country is more well prepared to handle it going forward. So right now there is a tremendous amount of optimism growing, and that should I think provide UK assets a strong bid going forward.
On the downside, Ed, it's worth noting, as far as the debt data that came out today, the UK's debt now worth more than its economy after the government borrowed a record amount in May, the £55.2 billion figure, 9 times higher than in May last year, the highest since records began in 1993, and the government debt now surging towards nearly £2 trillion. And exceeding the size of the economy for the first time in more than 50 years. Now, all of this is very, very expected, of course, but when you see it in black and white, it's extraordinary. Can you imagine predicting this a year ago, when you consider how the Conservative government over the last, what is it, 10 years or so, has got the debt down and further and further and further, and they were hoping to reduce it even further this year, of course. and we're that's all wiped out. That's all gone and beyond wiped out. It's quite extraordinary when you think about it, how quickly things have changed.
No, very much so, and I think you know the deficits that we're going to be seeing everywhere, they're going to be shockingly painful for future growth. And I think that right now, you know, the all of these governments are forced in a position, and no one's objecting to this in the short term. The problems will, you know, will be paying the price, you know, much further down the road. But right now, they're it is. It is what is needed right now, and I think no one's really focused on this because of the long-term effects. Because right now we're still trying to get through the pandemic, and the uncertainty is going to provide the catalyst for that to even probably get a lot worse. And I think deficits are going to continue to skyrocket here, and hopefully we'll see once the economy is back, they'll be able to the governments will be able to kind of finally bring down those deficits.
Let's talk about the EU now. I know it's one of your favourite subjects, Ed, and the EU Recovery Fund. We had a big meeting today of EU leaders. They've met, and of course, they've agreed to meet again. So, what was actually achieved today?
Actually, nothing really. But we did see that ECB President Lagarde kind of made her case, and she's just reiterating her stance that, you know, it's time. EU leaders need to it to deliver. The economic recovery is very vulnerable. Europe has lagged the rest of the world. And I think that there are growing hopes that Europe will be able to get a stimulus package that includes some form of debt mutualization and also fiscal transfer. So there's going to be big debates going forward, you know, from the Frugal Four, the Netherlands, Austria, Sweden, and Denmark. But I think there is strong optimism that something is going to get done. When we take a look at how the euro has performed, you know, since May 27th, when the initial announcement of this recovery fund has happened, you know, we've seen the euro really shoot up. You know, we've been kind of between 108 and 112 or 113. And now I think there's still high hopes that this is going to get pushed through. And if for some reason we start to see some hiccups, so you could definitely see that put a tremendous amount of pressure on the euro and the European bourses.
Ed, we've managed to get through a podcast almost without mentioning your commander in chief, President Donald Trump. Not quite sure how we did that. Well, I've got a question for you, though. We had some revelations this week from John Bolton in his latest book, of course, not published yet in the USA. So we won't talk about the specifics of those revelations yet. But with the election, what, less than 5 months away, around about 5 months away now in the United States, what are markets hoping for in November? Are they hoping for a Biden win?
I think if your hope is for the highest price, you want Donald Trump to become reelected. I think there's still, you know, former VP Biden is still positive for the markets. I think you'd still see stock markets eventually climb higher, but his stance on regulation, I think he'd come down. He'd have harsher measures on big tech, and as you know, we're a lot of these indices are heavily weighted on tech. So I think the lives for the Amazons, Googles, and Facebooks would become a little bit more complicated, and then that would likely pair some of these recent gains. But ultimately, I think both candidates are going to provide an opportunity for U.S. stocks to climb higher. I think the worst case scenario for equities was if you had a progressive, a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren become president, which, you know, makes the decision of Biden's VP pick extremely important. So Elizabeth Warren is still in the running. Governor Klobuchar did take herself out of the race, and I think there is growing momentum that you might see Biden select a female, possibly an African American. So there's a tremendous amount of, I mean, these candidates are on the older side. So there's possibility that you could see the VP need to step in at some point. So there's going to be a lot to watch. I think in the short term, I mean, it's hard to imagine that, despite, all these headlines in the U.S. of surges all across the country, especially it's widespread over 20 states. President Trump will have his first live campaign rally. It's the first one since March tomorrow, and it's he's defined the public health recommendations, and I think you're going to see that there is going to be no shortage of headlines regarding President Trump, and I think that it is very concerning that you could see up to 20,000 people possibly attend this, and Tulsa, Oklahoma has had low cases. That's why they Oklahoma has not been as impacted as the rest of the states, so that's why they chose that location. But it's I think it's a risk, and that's why they're having everyone sign waivers there. So I think you're going to see that this election is going to be extremely volatile, because you're going to have campaign rallies. You're going to see President Trump maintain his harsh rhetoric towards China. But I think no one's really believing that he's going to follow through on any of those tough stances, and that's why you continue to see U.S. equities remain, for the most part, resilient, even when he's now tweeting about possibly abandoning that relationship or whatnot. Today's developments on the U.S. China trade front was relatively positive. China's reconfirming their commitment to delivering on that phase one deal. So there's so many stories to follow, but ultimately right now I think both candidates are still positive for risk appetite, and for US stocks, and possibly a little bit better for Donald Trump. But I think that if Biden does win, and if he somehow, if it's a blue wave and they flip the Senate, that's still positive for U.S. stocks, but I think in the immediate short term, you would see some weakness.
Okay, before I let you go, can you give us a brief summation of what to look forward to next week? What's the big data coming out, and any other business stories that we should look out for?
Next week's a tricky week. There's not one main data point or event to follow. It's kind of there's several scattered throughout the week, but just quickly, I think on Monday, you do have the EU and China holding a video conference to talk about their future relationship. I think anything that supports globalization is going to be positively viewed by the markets. Also on Monday, you're going to see Apple have their Worldwide Developers Conference. They might make some pushes towards announcing their own announcing a shift to making their own processors for their computers. So I think if tech gets a buzz, that's always something that's been helping lead this rebound. So that's important. Tuesday, it's all about the flash PMI readings. We'll get the updates from the EU and the US. Everyone's expecting a sharp rebound. And then the middle of the week, Wednesday, we have the IMF has their growth projections. So they've kind of already telegraphed that they're going to be downgrading things. It's likely going to be a lot worse than what they said in April. So everyone's expecting some really tough revisions here. And then on Thursday, we do have bank stress tests announced, results announced by the Fed. That's also closely watched, but I don't think anyone's heavily concerned about that. Friday is the big day prop, with the economic data from US spending figures. You're going to personal spending, personal income. Hopefully it confirms the strength of the US consumer. We did have that strong retail sales beat last week, and you're going to see the Russell reconstitution. So you're going to have Friday become possibly one of the most volatile trading days of the, or highest volume trading days of the year. So lately it seems that sometimes these Reconstitutions are somewhat negative, but we'll see if it is going to provide some extra chaos. So lots of volatility, a lot to watch, and then also too, it's all about the virus. We have to see exactly how these cases are trending right now. We are seeing several states, California, Texas, Florida, Arizona, continuing to have record surges. So that's very concerning, and I think that if those do not start to plateau, there's going to be calls for harsher restrictions, and you'll see reopening momentum fade.
Okay, thanks very much for joining us today. Have a very good weekend, and we'll speak to you again next time.
Always a pleasure.
Was the Oanda podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.